Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
With the ringing of the mindfulness bell, the invitation is to stop. Stop thinking. And just open to this silence. This field of awareness. An awareness that's always there. An awareness that precedes thought. Thich Nhat Hanh said, if you can touch one moment with pure awareness, then every moment is included, because all we ever have is the sacred moment. So the practice this Sunday morning is just to stop, to be here now, and to open. Open to the breath. Open to the peace that is. The Bible says it is a peace that passes all understanding. In other words, you can't understand it. How can I find an abiding peace in a world that is in chaos? And there is the mind yet going with another assumption. And so we just turn the mind off like we would turn off the television station. And guess what? We're still there. It's just the voices in the mind aren't talking. And so who is it that's still there? We had a declaration of principle 33 years ago when I started, and I remember the very opening line was, I am a point of awareness in the mind of God. I don't remember the rest of it, because after that, we don't need to talk, do we? I am a point of awareness in the mind of God. And so that delicious realization is that we're not our thoughts. That we're not the local mind. Yes, we have a local mind, but for this holy instant, we've turned off the local mind and we've accessed the non-local or the universal mind, the mind of God, if you will. A mind that doesn't label things as right or wrong, good or bad, but a mind that accepts all things, bears all things, endures all things, and loves all things, because it's the heart mind. It's what the Buddhists call the bodhicitta. They put the head and the heart together so that our thoughts become compassionate thoughts, loving thoughts, inclusive thoughts, thoughts of oneness. And so with this mindfulness bell, the invitation is to shift out of the me consciousness into the we consciousness, that we are one, one life, God's life, perfect. In the science of mind, Ernest Holmes says, if we teach anything, we teach oneness. One, one, one. And so in oneness, you don't have two. You don't have other. You don't have an enemy. You don't need to arm yourself against some force outside of you, because you realize that it is all you. That there's only one life here. It's God's life, and we're all a part of it. And so the essential shift is to move into this realization that we are all each other. I am you, you are me, we are one. And then you see the butterfly differently. Not as a little critter that's drinking the nectar of the flower, but you see it as part of your own self, going through a metamorphosis and a transformation, a beautiful expression of the one life. You see the hummingbirds drinking from the Salvia guaranetica, hovering in space, tiny little birds, and you realize that you're one with the hummingbird. I was walking my pug this morning in the stroller, and the bunny rabbits have come out of their warren and there's a little bunny rabbit hopping down the alleyway. And the little bunny rabbits were so cute. I put the pug down so he could waddle around them, and they didn't care. They weren't afraid. He could barely see them. He sniffed them. And so what if it was just life meeting life on life's terms? Not here to not here to do anything other than to inspire us. The great mystery of belonging. And then we walk out into the garden of life and we see the beauty everywhere. We can see God in the smallest of things because God is revealing herself, her beauty, her majesty in every tree, every flower, every bird, in the wind that blows, in the sun that shines. And we witness it. It says in the Quran, "Am I not your Lord?" To which we, the creation, said, "Yes, we witness you." And so what if our only role is to witness this presence, first within ourselves and then within each other? And when we see it in the other, we're calling it forth. And so this Sunday morning, I'm going to explore that theme for the month, that we are better together than we are alone. And so when the parts of the puzzle come together, we can then reveal something so much greater than the individual. So I invite you to enter into the we consciousness with me this Sunday morning and to open your eyes, enter the playground of the unmanifest. I got a strange phone call from one of the congregants that left the church maybe 30 years ago. I still remembered her name. Judy got a call from her as well. And she was looking for a rare book that was no longer in print. The book was called The Shadows of Your Mind by Dr. Tom Johnson. And he hasn't been on the planet for over 20 years. And so I went through my bookcase, and among my old books, I found a tattered version of The Shadows of Your Mind. And I opened this book that I hadn't read in 20 years, at least. And he talks about the nature of the mind is to think, and it's filled with fakakta. It's got stories, it's got, you name it. And his whole premise is, and when the shadows of the mind are going crazy, you're going to go nuts. So what if we could turn off the mind? And then guess what? Awareness is still there. We're still operating. The whole idea of awakening, and you know, we have this big sign out there. We went to Whitefish, Montana 30 years ago, and there's a line from the Bible that says, if you don't have a vision, you will perish. So all these ministers showed up. I'm a brand new minister, and we're visioning. Visioning is where you go within and you ask the universe, what is the vision? Now, vision has to be so lofty, like world peace, that you're pulled toward the vision. So we asked, what does science of mind have as its vision? Because we didn't have a vision 30 years ago. And so we're all meditating, going into that place of discovery. And from the voice of the one, this woman stood up and she said, our purpose is to awaken humanity to its spiritual magnificence, period. To just awaken. Because there's something that is awake within us. It's the one life. And once it awakens, it doesn't see alligators as threats. It sees them as your children. They're all your children because it's all one life. And then you realize what's happened. I've stopped seeing myself as separate from a berry. I and the berry are one. Now that's berry with an E, not berry with an A. And then you go, huh? And he's making your mind think in a different way. What if we're here to think in a new way? This beautiful young lady came here for the first time. She's been eyeing us for over a year. And she says, I don't want a spiritual journey that's based in religiosity. Well, this isn't a religion. Imagine no religion. I wonder if you can. Well, that's what we're all about. Trey, when we went on this retreat to escape from the world, he found a documentary. He likes to watch these documentaries. And this one was called Stay Sweet. And it was about Warren Jeffs, who is the prophet in the FLDSLs, the Fundamentalist Mormons in down there in Utah. And Warren Jeffs was called the prophet. And he had 62 wives, because the more wives you have, the closer you are to God. And I'm thinking, oh my God, why are we watching this documentary about Warren Jeffs? He's now in prison, you'll be happy to know. How could people buy into such a distorted way of thinking in its fundamentalism in its purest forms? So here I am in this little chapel. We went to this retreat in Mentone. They had a little chapel that they built with a Bible in the chapel with candles. And I went out to this chapel to meditate when I was up in Mentone. And this Bible was huge. It was beautiful. And it had these painted things. You just turn the pages. It was like an art book. So my favorite psalm is the 8th psalm. What is man that thou art mindful of him? Thou hast created him a little lower than the angels and hath crowned him with honor and glory. And I remember as a little kid, think we're here to honor and to glorify that one presence. But then I turned the page to Psalm number 9. And the Psalm number 9 said, and he will go with God's wrath into the den of iniquity to Zion, where he will purge the sinners with the judgment and the wrath of God. And I closed and I said, that's Warren Jeffs. That's what they read, that kind of stuff that scares you. Right there in the Psalms, it wasn't a celebration of love. No, it was a threat. If you don't behave, the wrath of God is going to come down upon you. And then I realized I had to evolve out of that. I had to evolve out of that way of God as a punishing, wrathful God into this God of love. And so what if we have the challenge and the opportunity to face life and yet choose you this day what kind of spiritual food you're going to feed off of? I had this breakthrough at 4 a.m. because I'm talking about how we face adversity, and I pulled out You Are the Power by Dr. Kennedy Schultz, who's my teacher. And at the end of this lovely book that he wrote, he talked about spiritual mind treatment, and I was reading his treatise on the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, it means there's one power, it's ours, it's not just, and it's not a man, one presence, which art in heaven, which is this place within us. Hallowed be thy name. Thy nature is holiness, you know. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. It's all about the divine order. And then, lead us not into temptation, deliver us from evil, for thine is the kingdom. Kennedy's take on that was, let's deny the stuff that doesn't serve us anymore. And as I'm reading his denial step in spiritual mind treatment, I'm realizing he's denying the very thing that has presented itself to be healed. In other words, if we deny the disease, if we deny the sadness, if we deny the fear, well, then we're giving it power over us. That's the Jungian piece. So in the month of August, I decided to resurrect a class that was very healing for me. And it came from Pema Chodron, her lovely little book, Living Beautifully with Uncertainty and Change. And they recognize in the spiritual teachings on the planet that there's going to be stuff in life. She has a name for it in Sanskrit. It's called Shempa, the stuff that upsets you. Now, it's natural to be upset, and her premise is relax and enjoy it and face it. If you run away from it, you'll never get away from it. If you deny it, you're giving it power over you. So we had it wrong 33 years ago when I started ministry, or at least I had it wrong. It's not about running away from it. It's not about denying it. It's about facing it, and in facing it, find the hidden wholeness right there inherent within it. So let me just give you a taste of this lovely lady that I'm going to be teaching in a couple of weeks, Pema Chodron. My sister-in-law, who's kind of new to this new thought teaching, Jenny, she says this book was so good she wanted to eat it. Now, she's up there in Maine, and I said, if she's going to eat a book, I'll see what it has to say. So here's what she says. Falling in love with the human condition is not dividing ourselves in two. We're not trying to cultivate one part of ourselves and get rid of another part. We're not here to be Pollyanna metaphysics. Oh, everything's perfect, whole, and complete, and all is well in my world. No. We're here to be real metaphysicians. And when life gives you caca, face the caca. Good to see you. I hadn't seen you in a long time. Okay, so we're not trying to cultivate one part of ourselves and get rid of the other part. We're in training to open to it all, to open to the shadow part, to open to the part of you that you have rejected. My prayer partner in Canada, we were doing a circle of love there on Quadra Island, and he did a workshop that pissed everybody off, but they all signed up for it in droves. And the workshop was called Facing Your Demons. Now, he says, until you face your demons, the demons have power over you. Now, so many in religious science want to deny the part that is aberrant. You know, oh, it's just an aberrant thought. It's just a renegade thought. We'll just get rid of it. No, no. This is not Pema Chodron. We're not trying to cultivate this different part of ourselves. So she says, am I willing to let go of everything? Each person's life is like a mandala. Remember, we're one life. We used to do mandala workshops here. We stand in the center of our own circle, and everything we see, we hear, we think forms the mandala of your life. That's kind of playful that way. And he says, we enter a room, and the room is our mandala. We get on a subway, and the subway car is our mandala, down to the teenager checking messages on her iPhone or the homeless man that's slumped in the corner. We go for a hike in the mountains, and everything, as far as we can see, is our mandala. Whether it's the clouds, the trees, the snow on the peaks, even the rattlesnake that's coiled on the path along the way. We're lying in a hospital bed, and the hospital becomes our mandala. We don't set it up. We don't get to choose what or who shows up in our mandala. It is what it is. As Trungpa Rinpoche used to say, the mandala that is never arranged but is always complete, and we embrace the mandala of our life just as it is. So Sylvia, you got COVID when you went to see your family. It's just the way the mandala is shaped up. Now she's wearing a mask, and she's finding the gift in that. So everything that shows up in your mandala is a vehicle for awakening. Everything is there for our awakening. This too is good. This too is for God, and I demand to see the blessing. He says, from this point of view, awakening is right at your fingerprints, and it's always continuously happening. It's happening right now in a world that's in chaos. You know, there's an order, there's a disorder, and there's a reordering. We're part of the reordering. And it's all about seeing things with fresh eyes, to see things with the eyes of oneness, to know that everything is sacred. You know, Walter Starkey wrote a wonderful book. It was his last book. It's called It's All God, From the Flowers to the Doo-Doo. It's all God. You can't just say the flowers are God. So the third commitment, she goes on to say, it's up to you whether your life is a mandala of neurosis or whether your life is a mandala of sanity. How many of you live the mandala of neurosis? Oh, good. I have a handful of you out there. How many are trying? And there is no try. But how many of you are succeeding at a sense of sanity in their life? Yes, you're sensing that life is getting better, that I'm able to meet each day not as the victim of that day, but as a co-creator with the universe of that day. Choose you this day who you're going to be. Are you going to step out? 2 men looked out of a prison cell. One saw stars, the other saw mud. Which of the prisoners are you going to be? Are you going to look through the cell walls and see the opportunities of the universe? Or are you going to sit there and play victim? I mean, it's easy to play victim because we have a society that's based on that. We have a very yang society. I'm still thinking about teaching the Tao Te Ching because they talk about yin-yang, and we have a yang culture, a very do-it culture, a very masculine culture, a very fix-the-problem kind of culture. And in the Tao Te Ching, they say, we need to be more yin. We need to be more receptive. We need to surrender more. We need to say, let thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, not my will. And then there's a whole different thing, Barry. You begin to surrender, and you begin to trust, and you're comfortable with I don't know. You're comfortable with I don't know, but because something greater than me does know. You know, I started this month off by speaking about living in the question. When you're living in the question, how might I bring a new consciousness to Huntsville and embrace a spiritual journey that is, by its very nature, recovery is in discovery. You recover when you discover there's this something that was there for you, and it's always been there for you. And so the question is, am I going to commit to that recovery, to that discovery of that innate nature that will set us free, which will lead us to sanity instead of neuroses? Because it's all the shadows of your mind that are driving you crazy. You see how the pieces of the puzzle kind of fit together? And so she's taking you into a mandala, saying it's all your life. So when you hear the wisdom of a Jesus who says, love thine enemy, do good to those that harm you, he recognized they were all part of the oneness. And if you've made them the enemy, you've projected enemy on something outside yourself. And if you put the power out here, well, then you've lost the power in here. So this is the awareness. Awareness is the Lord of everything, says the Buddha. The very end of Pema Chodron, she says here. The pain of your confused mind and the brilliance of your awakened mind wake up the mandala of your life. The pain of your confused mind? No, we have to embrace that, because Barry, you're going to have a confused mind. It's still going to be there. And the brilliance of your awakened mind? Well, it's there simultaneously. And they make up the mandala of your life. So Michael, part of me is asleep and part of me is awake. And when I get asleep, I can, you know, see the awful stuff, and I'll call up Barbara and we'll just complain, or maybe not. You know, there's a lady that lives across the street, and I love how people label things. And you know, when you label anything, you limit it. And we have these big old pine trees in our neighborhood, and she calls them the dirty pine trees. When we were up at this place in Mentone, they had the huge pine forest, and underneath where we would sit in these benches were the pine needles that had been there for years and years and years. It was like you were walking on a carpet of pine needles, and the smell of the pine was so fragrant. And then in reading the book, The Voices of the Trees, Speaking for the Trees, she talked that the pine tree, the dirty pine tree, gives off something called pentene, which literally heals the human immune system. It brings us into harmony and balance, radiating from the trees. I almost wanted to knock on my neighbor's door and have her read that chapter to her, but then I realized ignorance is temporary, stupid is forever, and you're not going to change somebody's mind. You're not going to change somebody's mind. So she has these commitments that you make, you know, a commitment to do no harm, a commitment to help your neighbor, and the third commitment invites us to make the mandala of our life an ally and the birthplace of enlightenment. To make the mandala of our life the birthplace of enlightenment. Now, wherever your life is, isn't that great? So we started off knowing that we're more together than alone, that we're the one life coming together. When two or more are gathered in my name, in my nature, I am there. So what if we come together in the Christ awareness? We're the Christification of humanity. Or you could say the awakening of humanity. And all humanity needs to awaken. Llewellyn von Lee, my Sufi teacher, he wrote a book called Awakening the Planet, Awakening Life on a Planet. And so when we start to awaken, we contagion each other with this new way of perceiving life, not as the separate self who can be in the to-me consciousness, which is the victim consciousness, but you realize that everything is here for us, that's the for-me consciousness. Then if you're a singer, like my daughter there, Emily, you're the through-me consciousness that spirit sings through you, creates through you. You're even having a deeper sense of intimacy with it. And then ultimately, it's as you, the as-me consciousness. So when you become the Reiki master, and it's a dubious distinction, I also am one. We're here in service to this energy of divine love, of this healing something. So then, if you're really a good Reiki master, you're a conduit for this vibrational field to emanate in the world. Well, that's a huge responsibility, isn't it? If you think you're the doer. And then you move into the Bhagavad Gita. And the whole premise of the Bhagavad Gita, two things. I am not the doer. This divine presence is. And the second one is have no attachment to the outcome of whatever you do. So when you show up for the moment and you open your heart, it doesn't matter. When I show up in a hospital, at someone's hospice, and they're ready to make their transition, I show up with an open heart, and I say, for the divine will, for the highest good for all. Now, that may mean that this person will come back and have a remission, or it may mean that this person will transition and return to their source. Either way, I'm not the doer, and there's no attachment to outcome. So could we live in the question that we don't have the answers? Could we live in uncertainty? Could we live in discovery? And in discovery, we find our own recovery. I love that phrase. My friend Carol Carnes used that. The second week, I explored the web of knowing. There is this intelligent universe. And if you ever want to know about the web of knowing, watch NOVA, or watch David Attenborough's The Green Planet. They look out at nature in a scientific way. We have an intelligent universe. The galaxies are intelligent. The plant world is intelligent. Not so much the human species. You know, we're challenged because we label things good and bad, right and wrong. We got to get a new creation story. The first creation story was that it's all good and it's all God and it's all sacred. Second creation story, you got Eve. That poor woman had been considered second rate ever since Eve led Adam astray. And then they must suffer by bearing children. You know, that old way of thinking. And then, of course, Jesus had to come along, die for our sins so we could be washed in the blood of Jesus. Holy cow, what kind of mythology have we created? Now, could we be willing to die to that mythology? My prayer partner, he said, from Canada, he said, I understand that there's a new religion in America. It's called Christo-fascism. And I said, oh, no. I said, you Canadians. I said, but we're close. We're close. And if you can laugh at it, you can maybe create some distance from it. Because we cannot heal on this planet if we deny this web of knowing, this web of intelligence. That our planet is intelligent. It's here to save us, if you will. The trees are here to save us. The woman that wrote the book, Speaking for the Trees, she had a way to heal our planet from global warming. She's a scientist. She was from Ireland. She was aristocracy. Her father was royal, but her mother wasn't. She was just a Celtic woman. So when the family that had all the money wouldn't take her as an orphan, she ended up being raised by the Celts in Ireland. So she was kind of witchy anyway. Then she moved to Canada, and she got her PhD in environmental science. And now she goes around raising consciousness all over the planet, how we can save ourselves from global warming. And her solution is that every human being on the planet will plant one tree a year for 6 years. And by then, we will have overcome what's going on the planet because of the carbon emissions. You know, she's very scientific. But she recognized that the trees are our salvation. Well, wow, it's just a whole different way of seeing things. So she's connected to that web of knowing. So could we open to, there's a knowing within us. In Jesus wrote the things called the Gnostic Gospels, and the Christians don't ever refer to them. So if you want to read Jesus, go to the Gnostic Gospels, because there's none of the hearsay about his virgin birth or any of that stuff, nothing about his resurrection or his crucifixion. It's just the sayings of the teacher, and they're called the Logians. And so if you study the teachings of what Jesus said, he says, the kingdom of heaven is spread out upon the earth, but you don't see it. You know, he says, if you liberate that which is within you, which is this web of knowing, that which is within you will save you. It will launch you into a realization of your divinity. If you do not liberate that which is within you, that which is within you will destroy you. Whoa. He also said in the Gospel of Thomas, you can kill the Father and you'll be fine. That's your idea of God. You can kill the Son and you'll be fine because there is no death. But he says, if you kill the Holy Spirit, you shall perish. Let those who have ears to hear hear. So what would the Holy Spirit be? You know, you take that into that stay in the question. The Holy Spirit is the aliveness. It's that which doesn't die. It's the loving. The Trinity. There's the lover, loving, the loved. The loved may go, the lover may go, but the loving is eternal. So he's trying to get us into this present participle of life, the knowing, the loving, the peacing, the freeing. You know, that's what this presence is. It's constantly happening and it's alive. It's not a dead zone. It's this web of life. And then last week I talked about it's larger than ourselves. I still hear Llewellyn. I come from Science of Mind. I'm studying with this Sufi teacher and I'm talking about changing your thinking, changing your life and creating a better reality. And he says to me, it's not about you. It's never been about you. It's about God. It's about the oneness. It's about the love. And then when you stop making it about you, my God, it's something so much greater. Could we put ourselves in service? You know, I love the marquee out here. Gigi and Raul put it together for me. I came down from Maine. Instead of putting announcements and all that sort of stuff, we just put be kind, be loving, be a blessing. What if we could set an intention to lead by example? You know, Jesus said, by their actions, you shall know them. So in this, something that's greater in ourselves, could we put ourselves in service to this one life? You know, and when it's so funny, I was reading Thich Nhat Hanh. Thich Nhat Hanh says, you cannot love God. And Jesus said this too, if you can't love your fellow human being whom you have seen, how can you love something that's invisible if you can't even love the visible that's right in front of you? So could we put ourselves in service to a greater idea than ourselves and say, how can I be an instrument for your mercy, for your compassion, for your creativity, for this knowing? How can I be in service to even the least of these? How can I see my oneness with a berry, with an E, and my oneness with a Jenny? I try to remember names. I'm not so great at it. And so I pulled out Don Miguel Ruiz. I was going to teach him. He wrote The Four Agreements. And you know what's so funny is when the truth comes to you, it comes in many different forms. Don Miguel Ruiz is a Toltec. He comes from the indigenous culture in Mexico. And in the Toltec tradition, how they handle adversity is by making no assumptions. That's his first agreement. The assumption was that this is undesirable and I want to get rid of it. Make no assumptions, he said. What if it's coming here to clean out your house? Rumi says this being human is like a guest house and come knocking at the door, your fears and your judgments and your worries and your anger. And he says, invite them all in. They may be coming to clean out your house for a greater realization. So Don Miguel Ruiz is saying the same thing. Make no assumptions that this is a bad thing, that someone wants to organize your kitchen and put it in a different way. You begin to see your habits and your resistance to being manipulated by others. So the second thing he's talked about was be impeccable with your word. This is in the Toltec tradition. And he says the reason is because all of this is a dream. None of this is really real. It's a construct of the imagination. So when you realize life is a dream, the metote, he says, well, then can you be impeccable with your word, with your thought? You know, so what if you're going around thinking really limiting thoughts, thinking that everybody's out there? Then you become paranoid. You become neurotic. You begin to think that they're out to get you. And then you realize that you're only a victim of your own thought patterns. So not only are you impeccable with your word, when people go around saying, oh, life is so hard, life is so hard, I said, do you realize what you're putting into the law? The words in your mouth, says Moses, a blessing or a curse according to how you use it. So when you use your word, are you affirming that life is here for me, to assist me? My friend Helen Street said, there's only one prayer that you need. Now I love it when the clarity, and this was a very saintly woman. She says, the only prayer you need is to the universe, assist me in assuming the consciousness that is required to meet the kitchen Nazi. That was for Mary. She went in her kitchen and redid the whole kitchen and didn't ask her. So to you say to the present, assist me in assuming the consciousness that's required. And maybe the consciousness is always a loving response. Thank you. Thank you for your intention to serve. But no, thank you. I'll choose to live in my own state of chaos and not your state of order. And so you begin to take responsibility for your life. So be impeccable with your word. The third agreement that Don Miguel Ruiz said was, this is the hardest for everybody. Take nothing personally. If you're taking something personally, you've given your power away. Remember, it's not about you. So a true red flag when adversity comes, if you're taking it personally, like they didn't smile at me, or they didn't call me back, or whatever the story you're telling yourself is, it's your reaction that is creating the suffering. So he sets us free to face adversity. It's not about you. Don't take it personally. And then the last little agreement that he makes in the Toltec tradition, and it's so benign and so lovely, he says, always do your best. Isn't that what a parent would tell their kids, Emily? Just do your best. If it doesn't meet up the world standards, but at least it was your best. You know, I love to use baby Speck as the metaphor for there, because she could never be trained by the powers that be. We took her to, we thought they might be service animals, Barbara, because they were both so loving. And we brought them to this place called Service Animals of Huntsville. And it was just Bert and Speck at the time. We went in there with the intention to serve. And Speckles got so excited, she started running in circles. And the woman said, control your dog. And she was running in circles, and she was happy, and she brought life into that place. And it got Bert excited, and he started running in circles too. And they said, control your dog, control your dog. I said, Trey, I think we need to leave, because she says, we cannot have dogs that are wild like this, assisting people in the dog. And I said, okay, obviously, it's not a good fit. Take nothing personally. We're doing our best, but you're missing out on two lovely dogs that can bring such joy. Can you imagine her going to the nursing home and running in circles? She'd have that whole place in stitches. To this day, we miss her. Jeff Foster changed my life when he came into my life. It was after the heart attack. And he wrote this little book called Falling in Love with Where You Are. Right where you are, right in the midst of your cancer diagnosis, right in the midst of COVID, right in the midst of your lover walking out on you and you losing your job, right in the midst of that, could you bring love into that environment? And Jeff Foster, he's had a whole life experience that points to that. That's called empirical knowledge through life experience. So I just pulled a little taste of him out, because this is what works for me. He calls it a natural healing. He said, our wounds
for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.